I'd like to welcome our new sponsor, Couchbase. Couchbase is an open source NoSQL document and key value store database, requires no external cache, supports SQL and analytical queries for JSON data. Couchbase supports technologies like Kubernetes, Java, .NET, JavaScript, Go, and Python. Download it, give it a try at couchbase.com/Hanselminutes. That's couchbase.com/Hanselminutes. And I'll remind you that when you support our sponsors, you support this show. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Edward Thompson, product manager at GitHub, calling in from the UK. How are you, sir?
Doing well. I'm doing as well as can be expected, Scott.
Indeed. This is one of those questions when you say, how are you? And you're like, I'm okay. I mean, some people say that it's nice to discover that your lifestyle was actually called quarantine. We didn't know that that was how we lived, but apparently for some people, nothing changed. They just never went out and now they don't go out anyway.
Yeah. As an introvert, I just go to the grocery store less frequently.
Yeah. But for us, my wife is a nurse and she's going to the hospital and my brother's a firefighter. So I'm getting all of the like the war stories. It's definitely not fun. Hopefully when all of this is over, we will all be safe and warm and we'll maybe the year will give us back our summer. That would be nice.
Yeah, we
could get a coupon
crossed
or something. Yeah. Well, I am spending a lot of time on my computer because I am at home here, and in the process, I'm tidying up all my repositories and setting up all of my CI/CD. And I understand that you work on at GitHub and work on GitHub Actions.
I do.
So when GitHub Actions came out, I first saw it and I thought to myself, "This is like if this then that, like you know the or Zapier or Flow. It's like a workflow engine." And I see some people refer to it differently. Like when you talk to people in the public, they're like, oh yeah, it's like a workflow. And then people are like, no, it's a CI/CD. And it's like when two people argue about, you know, I like my peanut butter and I like my chocolate. It's like, well, no, you can have both.
That's exactly
what is the thing?
It is both of those things. So if I look back at GitHub Actions, if you rewind, we announced it in November 2018. And when we did, we really thought of it as a way to extend the GitHub platform, a way that you could extend GitHub. And so it was a very workflow engine-y idea. Way back, you know, as long as I can remember using GitHub, we've had webhooks and we've had a REST API. Mm-hmm. And GitHub Actions was a way to take those two things and use GitHub's compute, GitHub's infrastructure to actually automate tasks. So let's say when somebody opens an issue in your repository, you can run a workflow and it can, I don't know, add a label to that issue. Things like that. And so we launched that as a beta again, and I think it was November 2018 at GitHub Universe. And people looked at that and the first thing that they wanted to do, and this should have been really obvious to us, but they wanted to build their repositories. And you could, for like a limited value of build, you know, if you had, you know, a TypeScript project and you wanted to compile it to JavaScript, GitHub Actions could do that. But if you had a, I don't know, a Swift application and you wanted to build an iOS app, not so much. Like the architecture just wasn't geared up for that. So we actually, you know, hit pause on the beta and we kind of revisited what GitHub Actions meant and we added CI/CD capabilities. So now you can do that build, whether it's, you know, Mac OS or Linux or Windows. We've got those machines for you in our cloud. And so now we have CI/CD capabilities as well. So it's really both.
When I think of GitHub, I think of like massive amounts of storage. I think about like all the world's source code in this just massive, massive Git repository. I know it's like billions of Git repositories, but I just imagine one giant one. So I think storage. I don't think compute. So when I think of the problems that I would guess as a layperson, what GitHub would deal with would be, wow, they have a lot of storage problems. But now you've decided not only to have storage problems, but also compute problems that in themselves have combinatorics because you build your main branch and you build your sub branches and all your PRs need to be built. Suddenly by getting into the CI/CD business, you have two problems or times, you know, problem compute time storage problems.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's funny you mentioned that because I actually started out at GitHub on the team that stores your Git repositories. So
oh, okay, good.
Yeah. And so then I pivoted to this problem instead. But what you say is exactly right. You know, we have to maintain this fleet of servers to do your builds. And, you know, Mac OS is particularly challenging because it ends up being that we have to, you know, take trash cans and fit them into racks somehow.
Referring to the lovely shape of the Mac Pros.
Oh, it's delightful, isn't it? It fits really well in a 19-inch rack.
Yeah, they stack so well.
Yeah, that's
right. You can't just run a Mac in a container. Like, you would think that they're so into containers and Linux that they would. You're on a Mac. I mean, why can't I just run a Mac in a container and do my build there?
Wouldn't that be nice? You run into licensing requirements. If you want to run a build on a Mac, you have to have physical hardware. And you can virtualize it a little bit. Like that, Apple will let you do that. But you do need a physical Apple device.
Wow, that is unfortunate. But you do have runners for Linux, for Mac, for Windows, even ARM.
Even ARM, yeah. We don't actually offer ARM in our cloud, but you can, if you want to, you know, bring a Raspberry Pi, you can plug it in, you can put our runner on it, and then you can run your workflows right there. And that's something that I actually do from time to time, just to make sure that ARM works.
Okay, hang on a second. So you can do a local, like you can add yourself to the GitHub cloud effectively for your own use. And the actions run in the cloud until they run down onto your runner and then run on your Raspberry Pi and then run back up?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You basically get to specify what platform you run on. And again, it could be Windows, it could be Linux, it could be Mac OS, and those are things that we have. But it could be your own hardware in your own data center, or, you know, when I say data center, you know, I'm looking around under the desk.
My closet.
And there's a Raspberry Pi sitting there. And yeah, that'll work.
That is pretty cool. Okay. So one of the things that is the most powerful about it is the marketplace and the number of actions, because, you know, you kick off a thing like this and you don't know if anyone's going to care. But if you go to the GitHub marketplace, there's over 3,000 actions, which is just a stupid amount of stuff, like literally anything you can think of.
Yeah.
How did you know that you would get 3,000 or more, like thousands of actions?
I didn't know. Just worked out. I'm glad it did.
Well, it must be easy to make them. Otherwise, there wouldn't be 3,000 of them.
It is easy to make. And it's actually a really powerful way to extend workflows. So GitHub Actions is the platform that runs your workflows. And then you can actually use what's called an action. And I regret the name a little bit. But an action itself is a reusable component that you can use in your workflows. And they are exactly right. Super easy to build. So you can either build them in, you know, as a JavaScript app or a TypeScript app, or you can bring a Docker container. And what it'll do is just, you know, take some code, run it, and spit something out the other side. Let me give you an example. I have one that will send a tweet. So I can write a GitHub workflow that will run anytime I add an issue to my repository. And then I can use my action to send that issue as a tweet. And so one of the things that I'm looking at doing is actually automating the Twitter account for one of my open source projects so that any maintainer can just create an issue that has an announcement. You know, hey, we just released 1.0. Isn't that great? Go here to download it. And then we can actually send that tweet out. That means that nobody has to worry about credentials. Nobody has to think about, you know, logging into twitter.com. We can just manage our Twitter account from the same place that we manage the rest of our open source project.
Okay, so let's dig into that for a second. So you said you have an action, singular, and GitHub Actions is not just a collection of actions, but it's the entire product name. I am looking now at github.com/ethompsonsenttweetaction. Your action looks like it's just a GitHub repository, and inside there's an action.yaml file. So an action is itself a repository.
That's right. It's just a repository. It's got some code in it.
And then it says runs using Node 12. Can GitHub Actions run on anything, or what? Are they all Node?
So yeah. So you've got your choice when you are building an action. You can either build it as a Node.js app, and either TypeScript or JavaScript, or you can bring a Docker container. And so if you bring a Docker container, you can write your action in, you know, really anything at all.
Really? I could write a .NET action, a little .NET core, little tiny container.
You bet. That's right. You can bring that, you know, the .NET core base image, build your app mm-hmm. on top of it, package it up as a container, put that in a GitHub repository. So we'll take that Docker file, we'll build that repo for you into a container, and then we'll run that.
And is it kind of like, you know how when we're relearning Unix, people always say that the power of Unix is small, you know, single responsibility executables that are chained together with pipes and redirects and things like that. It seems like Actions does a similar thing. What context do you flow into your action, and what context flows out of it?
Right. So I think that's a really astute observation. That's definitely the way we thought about GitHub Actions, you know, in the first place, you know, as a workflow engine. That's really how we thought about it. The CI/CD aspects, a lot of people just want to run a script that is their build script, but the repository automation actions, it's basically designed so you have inputs, your action takes, and it will do some work, and then we'll set outputs. So you can just chain these things together, taking the output from one and feeding it into the input of another.
Interesting. Okay, but if I'm doing, let's say I have my little .NET one that I wrote in as a Docker container, and I wrote my action.yaml, and then mine flows context forward into send tweet. Is that context a JSON bundle? Is it a dictionary of some kind?
Yeah.
What name value pairs are being passed around?
Basically just a key value list, a dictionary of strings. You could put files on disk if you wanted to and communicate that way, but at its simplest form, strings.
Okay. So what's interesting is that when I showed up at this eThompson/send tweet action, and I'll have links to everything in the show notes, I note that, you know, you show up and you go, oh, look, it's just a GitHub repository. But at the top, it literally just says, use this GitHub action with your project. So you have identified that it is an action. I can click view on marketplace, and then I get a different view. So instead of seeing send tweet action, the pile of files in GitHub, I see your CI/CD for your send tweet action is in fact passing. I see the contributor. I can star it. It's now a marketplace. It's instantly turned your README and your repository into a marketplace item.
That's right. And in fact, you can see all this from the GitHub Actions workflow editor. So if you're on GitHub and in your repository and you want to use this, the easiest way to do that is actually to click the Actions tab. Mm-hmm. And then you can create a new workflow, and that will basically bring you into our YAML editor. And I don't know how you feel about YAML. I feel generally medium about YAML, but
I feel some kind of way.
I feel feelings about YAML, but like our editor actually has syntax highlighting and tab completion, which really helps the YAML experience. I got to tell you. But the other thing it has over on the right-hand side is a tab that will let you browse the marketplace. So you can add actions from the marketplace right there from within the editor.
I just went as an experiment to one of my very old repositories that I did with Kent Dodds called First Timers Only. And I see issues, pull requests, actions. I click on actions. And then it says, build and test your CSS repository. So it actually figured out what kind of stuff I have in this folder, and it took a guess. It says, oh, this looks like it's got some CSS there. And then at the bottom, it says already a popular workflows. It knows about Azure. It knows about Amazon. It knows about Google. I can probably get this running in an hour, maybe less, maybe minutes.
I hope so. Yeah, that's the goal. So we use what's called Linguist. It's a package. It's an open source project that GitHub created. And what Linguist does is it looks at your repository and tries to figure out what's in it, whether there's C or C sharp or Rust. And it'll basically analyze each file and give you a percentage. And so we look at the percentage, the biggest percentage. We are going to suggest those workflows for you. So if you have a Rust project and go to that page, you'll see starter workflows for Rust.
When you need to focus on building, do you want to get bogged down by your database? MongoDB is an intuitive, flexible document database that lets you get to building. MongoDB's document model is a natural way to represent data, so you can focus on what matters. MongoDB Atlas is the best way to use MongoDB. It's a global cloud database service that gives you all of the developer productivity of MongoDB, plus the added simplicity of a fully managed database service. You can get started free with MongoDB Atlas at mongodb.com/atlas. So I got to ask a question, though, that is kind of the elephant in the room. I have some familiarity with YAML, but my familiarity is with Azure DevOps. So I've got a lot of different repositories with small sites, and I recently set up two or three of them in DevOps, which I ended up using YAML for as well. And they're not complicated. They build the thing and they deploy the thing. I did it because it was free and it's easy. It looks like GitHub Actions is free and easy. When would I pick one versus the other? And should I, you know, should I move from one to the other?
If you're happy with what you have, no, I don't think you should move. But you know, when I look at sort of a greenfield CI/CD system, if I don't have any CI/CD on my project and I want to decide which one to use, the first question is it on GitHub? If the answer is yes, I'm probably going to start looking at GitHub Actions because it's really tightly integrated. I really like that my builds are in the same place as my source code. I think that makes it really easy. If the answer is no, GitHub Actions isn't going to work as well for you. It's not like we have some easy way to pull from, you know, GitLab or Bitbucket or you know, a server under your desk. And so Azure Pipelines can do that. The other thing that Azure Pipelines can do that GitHub Actions can't do is TFVC and Subversion and, you know, different types of repositories. You know, GitHub Actions is very focused on building a Git repository that's in GitHub. Azure Pipelines is much more generic about where the code comes from. The other thing that Azure Pipelines is really good at is like Azure workflows. You know, you mentioned that GitHub Actions, you saw the starter workflows and you saw Azure, AWS, and Google. Azure Pipelines, on the other hand, is a lot more focused on building your code and getting it into Azure as a deployment platform. And so, you know, that's certainly one difference to bear in mind as well.
Interesting. That's actually the best explanation that I've heard so far from anyone inside or outside of GitHub or Microsoft. That I actually feel like I finally get it, because I've got some very Azure-y things and some very complex tied into Azure stuff. They're very sophisticated builds and very sophisticated specifically deployments. And it makes sense because they're so generic to use Azure DevOps. They run in Azure, they do Azure stuff. But at the same time, I've got a lot of stuff in GitHub that where Azure would be an implementation detail. Like I could deploy it anywhere. So I could see myself using Actions for, you know, 60-70% of my things. And then for the very Azure focused stuff that is on the niche, on the edge, I would go and use DevOps. That actually makes sense. I literally, out in front of me now, can think about a future for my repositories and not feel bad about using either one of those things.
I don't think you should feel bad. Now, and to the Azure team's credit, they're also building GitHub Actions so that they're making it easier to deploy to Azure with GitHub Actions.
Okay.
But I don't think you should feel bad about either of your choices.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So why would GitHub get into the DevOps space? Like, is this an entering a marketplace kind of a thing? Because they could have just done nothing and just held the source code and let it go.
Sure. But I really think that there's a lot of value in tying these experiences together. Like I said, I really like that my code and my CI/CD are in the same place. I don't have to, you know, tab back and forth to different experiences. I don't have to log in a couple different times. And we're able to give you, you know, better integrations into GitHub itself if you're using Actions. So that's one aspect of it. The other place that we're extending out is into GitHub packages. And I think that these are like a natural combination. So I can take my code, I can build my code, and I can deploy my code. And if it so happens that what deploying my code means is creating a NuGet package or an NPM package, then I need somewhere to put that. And, you know, from one of my open source projects, that place ultimately is NuGet.org, because I want people to use that package. I want people to discover that package, you know, and so it's got to go on to NuGet.org. But while I'm doing development, I need a way to install that package and test it locally. And so I probably don't want it to go to NuGet.org as I'm doing testing, but it might make sense to push it to some other package registry so that I can still install it easily. And so that's a really good use for a private package registry or a package registry that isn't open to the public. Like, hey, look at these. This is a released product sort of version. And GitHub packages really shines there.
So they are peas and carrots. They're always together. GitHub Actions, GitHub Packages. If you do anything sophisticated, you'll find yourself using them together.
I think so. You know, I don't want to say always, because some of your deployments might not be something that gets packaged. You know, you might actually just build an EXE and push it up to a server.
If it's simple, yeah.
Yeah. But ultimately, you know, I see a lot of people building Docker containers, and mm-hmm. I think packages makes a lot of sense as a place to store those, even if just as an intermediate storage location before it ends up landing on your servers.
For anything that is a team that is building an intermediate step on the way to something else, or anytime you have someone building an internal package for use downstream, I just love having a separate private package registry. Like when I went years ago, when NuGet was very first coming out, and I'm a .NET person, so when I say NuGet, the audience can certainly replace that with RubyGems or Maven or Docker and NPM. But it was the height of sophistication at our company that my organization would create a NuGet package, a library, put it into a private registry, and then anyone else in the company could pull from there. And that package had no business being on the public NuGet.org because it was a private thing. But we allowed our package registry to represent the org chart, right? Ordinarily, you don't want to ship the org chart, but having a private package registry really opens up how one organization inside a company can interact with others within the company. It formalizes it from everything from versioning to releases.
Yeah, I think that it's really healthy to go that route. Because otherwise, you're just like sticking packages on a file share somewhere. And that's, you know, that feels very, I don't know, 1997 to me.
Well, you know, someone is listening to this this podcast and they're saying, I resemble that remark.
Ooh, yeah, you're right. I think that, you know, instead of taking offense, maybe you should look at that as an opportunity to adopt some more better practices within your organization.
Take a good hard look at yourself, well, Dr. Lecter.
Yeah. See, this is where I put my foot in my mouth again.
No, because it's true though. And here's the thing, we're not trying to shame anybody, but I have to, we all have been there, right? I'm sure that you have projects right now in GitHub. You, even product manager at GitHub, have projects that haven't got an action yet because you just haven't got around to it. You've got like, oh, this hobbyist thing or this thing I did with my kid. It's, you know, I should probably make a CI/CD. We're at a time now, I think, in 2020 where it's fair to say that if you can build it, then you should automate that build and you should have a formal CI/CD. You shouldn't have it building under, you know, on a computer under Anna's desk. That's not how you release software today. And it's so easy. There's no excuse. So I would encourage people who are listening to the show to not take offense, but rather to take a sense of empowerment. And when you're done with the show, go out and take that thing that you've never made build in a CI/CD environment and make it happen.
I think that's exactly right. You know, my friend Damien says that friends don't let friends right-click deploy, and there's a certain amount of truth to that.
I've said, Damien's great, Damien Brady. I've actually said, if you have to open up two Finder windows to deploy, you're probably doing it wrong.
Wait, I shouldn't just drag and drop?
Yeah. So, how are the updates since launch? We talked about how there are thousands of items in the marketplace. People are using it? Are you running out of compute? How's that going?
People are using it. Thankfully, we're not yet running out of compute. We're keeping up with demand. It does require us to, you know, to provision new machines once in a while. But yeah, I'm really overwhelmed by how people are using it. I'm really thrilled. It seems like people are using it mostly happy. Obviously, you know, there's some rough edges here and there, and we get feedback, and we're working on taking those rough edges down. You know, since launch, we've added, you know, dependency and artifact caching. We've added the self-hosted runner feature that I think maybe that happened like we announced that the day of GA, mm-hmm. Or if not shortly after. We just mm-hmm. added an API so that you can interact with it more programmatically.
One of the things that gets me like super geeked, like if I have to convince someone, hey, you should probably take that build and automate it, that's not exciting, right? Like if I see a friend, like, hey, have you got your CI/CD running yet? They're like, eh. But then I show them the pull requests for my sites. So I run this podcast, and for example, this podcast is on GitHub. I'm one person, but I have a global CDN, I have Azure, I have the power of the cloud, right? It looks like $1 million because the cloud allows me to look like $1 million, but I'm still only one development team. but I show people my pull requests. Right now I'm looking at my Hansel Minutes pull requests, and this is my most favorite thing. Maybe you can help me understand how this works. I have 11 pull requests, but it's a private repository and I'm one person. Who are these coming from? I just clicked on one, and Dependabot has seen that a NuGet package got an update, sucked out the release notes from the previous update up to, like, they did a diff of the release notes. They didn't just dump them, but they like have a bulleted list of what's changed. The commits have been rolled up, a change log, and it went and built the thing and is telling me I can merge the pull request. It's like having a vendor that works for you, but it's not a human.
Isn't Dependabot wonderful? Yeah, it's like having your own security team. Cool.
It's crazy. And you can talk to it. The part that blew me away, and this is where I get everyone converted, is you can then tell it stuff. You can say, use this milestone and squash that. And it will do it like it's a person, but you don't have to pay them because it's a bot.
Right. So the idea behind Dependabot is that it has this database of every... It's called a CVE. I think CVE stands for Common Vulnerability and Exposure, right? So every security bug on every package that's ever been released, and it can look at your project and see what NuGet packages you're using and figure out if there's a security vulnerability. And if there is, it knows what package version doesn't have that security vulnerability, and it can update you. And so it'll open that pull request automatically. And I think that is really, really cool. But here's another example of why I think having your source code and your Dependabot integrated with Actions is a great thing, because now you're going to run a build every time your Dependabot opens a pull request, right? Mm-hmm. And that build will hopefully pass if Dependabot did a good job. And I usually see that it does, right? Every time but Dependabot opens a pull request for me, I get a green build. All my tests pass. And so I actually have a pretty high degree of confidence that things are going to work. What if GitHub Actions could then just merge that pull request? It knows that who opened the pull request. It trusts Dependabot. It knows that the tests pass. So I actually have a workflow set up to go ahead and auto merge anything that Dependabot opens.
If you're not worried about regressions.
I'm pretty comfortable with my test suite.
Oh my goodness.
You have to be pretty comfortable.
That's the thing, right? And that's so interesting, because I'm like, I don't know. But at the same time, you do. I mean, and you can try it. And if it doesn't work for you, you can not do it. But that would be, to have that level of test coverage, to have that sense of confidence. If you think about how people who are listening might feel about their code, we've all had that code base that we are afraid of. Okay. Like, I don't want to piss it off. I don't want to anger the code, right? Just like, it works. Don't anger it, right? And you're saying that you literally have this bot putting things into production because you trust it.
I'll put it into staging.
Oh, you put it into staging. Okay. I'll give you that.
That's pretty close.
That's pretty good. I'm just going to start merging these things in just willy-nilly right now, because...
Why not? What could go wrong?
The podcast would stop abruptly is what could go wrong. But I get about 71%, 72% code coverage, so I'm doing okay. But I love that. So you said there's the security aspect of things, but then there's also whether or not Dependabot just notices that a minor release has happened. You can tell it, like, oh, this thing wasn't a security update, it was just a change, right? It manages all dependencies, not just security.
That's true. I mostly think about it from a dependence, from a security point of view, but you're absolutely right. It can tell you anytime something changes.
So that's one example of a bot. What other bots could I have creeping around my code that make me look like more than one person?
So one bot that I've seen used periodically is something like a CLA bot, where an open source project might have a CLA, a contributor license agreement. And so somebody who opens a pull request might need to actually, you know, sign some piece of, you know, legalese sort of paperwork saying that they assign their rights, for example, or that they accept all the terms that an open source project has. And you don't want to deal with that as an open source maintainer. I certainly don't. Like, I've got enough on my plate when it comes to dealing with the project. I try to write code. I try to get releases out the door, those sorts of things. I don't want to have to be like a lawyer in my spare time as well. So, like, you can have a bot set up that will see anytime somebody opens a pull request, if they're a new contributor, if they've never signed a CLA, the CLA bot can actually pop in and say, hey, go to this, you know, I don't know, DocuSign URL, maybe a some other link, you know, however you have it set up for your project and its governance, it can enforce that. I think the .NET Foundation, this is where I've seen that the most, is they've got one called like .NET Bot that does this and I think other things too. And it's, you should see its contribution graph. You know, it's that GitHub block, that calendar, it's just green all across. That is a glorious contribution graph that that bot has.
There's something to be said for just really well run, well botted, I guess, is that the word, open source projects. One of my favorite open source projects you should check out, just because they have, it's called Octoprint. It's a web interface for your 3D printer. And it is the most organized, most thoughtful, most well-run project that I have seen in a long time. It's run by, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, it's German. She's been on the podcast, Gina Hauser. And basically, she's got bots and issue managers and all kinds of tagging. And when you go to her issues, there's, you know, if you're just a person who just rolls in with a complaint, like it'll go and say, sorry, there's not enough information here. Like it could be a bug, but she'll mark it as status, awaiting information, potential bug. But if you don't fill out the form, right, it's basically like the soup Nazi. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. Like, welcome, add a new issue. Oh, you didn't fill out the information? We will wait for you to fill out the information, and then we will close the thing when you are, you know, unless you give us what you need to get. You can organize and automate things so that it's a garden. It's almost like Animal Crossing. You make your space, and GitHub then becomes your nesting ground for all of the things. You can make a healthy community with a series of actions and bots and management. It's just wonderful.
I think that's great. I think that for new contributors coming in and actually having an expectation and understanding what the process is really, really valuable. That's actually probably a place where I fall down as a maintainer, is not, you know, maybe living up to that standard.
So as we get towards the end here, what is coming next for actions on GitHub?
So the big thing that the team is working on now that we're really excited about is bringing actions to GitHub Enterprise Server. So when we launched Actions, we GA'd it last November, and it was available in GitHub.com and in, you know, the GitHub Enterprise in our cloud-hosted version. But not everybody wants a cloud-hosted, you know, place for their code. Even in 2020, a lot of people still want to have their source code, their issues, everything within their data center and, you know, behind their firewall. And so GitHub Enterprise Server is that product. It's GitHub behind your firewall. And so we're bringing actions into that. So you'll be able to spin up compute within your data center and talk to your, you know, private GitHub Enterprise Server instance. And so that's really the thing that we're really focused on right now. So GitHub Actions and GitHub Packages as well. We're going to be moving into GHES. The other thing that we're looking at is some more organization level workflows. So right now you build actions in a repository. What if you wanted actions, especially like the automation type of actions, for an organization instead of just a single repository? So that's another thing that we're taking a look at right now.
Very cool. And people can go into, of course, Google out there for Google with Bing, as I like to say, for GitHub Actions, GitHub Packages, and wander around the GitHub Marketplace, and you can get into DevOps in probably in your lunch hour and show your boss that you can get stuff building very, very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. I've been talking with Edward Thompson from GitHub. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.